This is Radio Radio. I'm Martin Spinelli. On this installment of Radio Radio, Art in Sound with Gregory Whitehead. Gregory Whitehead's CDs include Pressures of the Unspeakable, Shake, Rattle, Roll, and Degenerates in Dreamland. Here's a sample of Gregory Whitehead's work heard at the Whitney Museum's Bitstreams show.
Mr. Whitehead, are you there? Bugs Bardo Radio.
Bugs Bardo Radio.
Mein Name ist Gertrud Schumann.
Mr. Whitehead, are you there?
So, Mr. Whitehead, are you there?
Never.
Maybe?
In pieces.
On tape.
In pieces.
In pieces on tape.
Mr. Whitehead, are you there is, of course, a fairly dense environment of speakers in different layers of communication with each other, but all of which is rather ambiguous. So it's a kind of, it's an attempt to give a representation of a kind of life on air, but living on air being a state in which there are these fragments or pieces fractured voices that then are composed or shaped into something that has its own kind of organic reflex, a pulse, a rhythm. And yet the question of who is speaking is very elusive. Is there any one individual speaking, or is it more this kind of composite series of relationships? And for me, I mean, I think, and we've talked about this in the past, radio is not about the single voice. I try to give a representation of that by creating this kind of much more fluid, shifting, dispersed polyphony that's more almost like has a kind of monster quality to it, but not necessarily a kind of a threatening monster, but perhaps a benevolent monster that is simultaneously seductive, and yet as you enter into it, there's no one body there. So there's always something a little bit uncanny about entering into this body, and there's nobody there. So there's no easy answer to whether Mr. Whitehead is there. I think it's very common in whenever there's a new set of technological tools, I think it's not unusual to go through a period where artists are really doing nothing but, in a sense, learning the possibilities of the tools. So that's completely understandable. I think not just audio artists, but I think throughout the arts, there is a tendency to forget that inscribed within every technology is already a set of ideas. That technology, I mean, you believe that you're thinking about the technology, but the technology is also thinking about you. And you can often fall into the trap that you really, in a sense, become a mouthpiece for the thinking of the technology. That's why I think it's very, very important to, in a sense, disrupt the technology before you can use it. And to unravel it, if it's a software,
in a sense, really, bug it.
In a sense, you bug it before you. If it's been completely debugged, then maybe you have to bug it again before you can make it speak something which is fresh, that isn't already encoded within the system. I never begin with technology. Certainly, I mean, I always begin with language, as you know, or I begin with discourse, language. I begin with relationships.
Speaking of digital art, maybe in an arena of art where everything seems possible, where it seems like we can do anything, nothing is impressive or nothing is exciting. What do you think?
Well, or maybe that when everything is possible, then nothing matters. If everything is a series of numbers, then it's very, very difficult to produce any kind of representation that is singular, distinctive, that offers some resistance.
One of my One of my favorite lines from all of art history comes from William Morris, the 19th century English critic, poet, designer, revolutionary, who said, "There is no art without resistance in the material." Where's the resistance in digital art?
Well, I think that's, you know, Morris was just so extraordinary in his ability to take the pulse of his time. And, you know, that lack of resistance is so much a part of the spirit of our times that, you know, confronting that in some way seems to me, whether you're a painter, whether you're a videographer, a choreographer, whatever is your material, it seems to me that that question of resistance has got to be, if you think of central, of this kind of tidal wave of, as this kind of enormous, you know, tsunami, or the digital reality kind of tidal wave. And then you think, well, hopefully you can say, well, but every wave creates the counter wave or the undertow. And you think, well, and so I'm going to become part of that undertow. I'm going to become part of the counter wave or the wave back. But then you think, well, but the tidal wave inscribes the undertow. I mean, you actually don't want to become part of the wave. You don't simply want to be this kind of inanimate, you know, sort of, you know, you don't want to, you know, really being just tossed, flotsam and jetsam, you know, being tossed kind of unconsciously about in the wave. So you think that you're going to subscribe to the undertow, but then it turns out, of course, that the undertow is shaped or conditioned or certainly dependent on the power of the wave. So it seems like there's no way of avoiding it. So then you think, well, all right, I'm not going to think about the sort of dynamics of the wave. I'm going to think about surfing. I'm going to think about how I'm going to ride. I've had long, long conversations with real hardcore surfers, and they all point out that, well, yeah, some dudes like to, you know, just focus on that first 3 seconds, you know, that first moment, you know, just getting it. And then they'll pull out, you know, right away, because that's what they're interested in. Others are interested in getting in the sort of in the tunnel. And then there's that the mythical surfer who will one day catch that most magnificent and perfect, elegant wave, ride it all the way to the shore, leave the board on the beach, and leave and never ever surf again. And my point being that there are options.
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30.
Old avant-garde strategies of simply, you know, boring people and turning them off, you know, as being provocative are simply old avant-garde strategies and don't make for great radio. I don't think that just because something is challenging makes it interesting.
In the case of Gregory Whitehead, Gregory Whitehead's work,
you can't
makes
help
you
but listen
to Gregory Whitehead
really
when it's on.
It really is interesting.
You know, it's engaging.
It makes you stop what you're doing and listen to the radio. When I've played pieces by Gregory and
people
other people
call me up
are,
and say, that was incredible.
I had to
put my work down and I had to just sit there and listen to
the
radio.
Radio then
and
becomes then no
you've
longer
got something
background.
Going. Something that's on while you do something else, it becomes foreground. And you're riveted to it and you stop what you're doing and you listen.
Strangely, because one doesn't always associate him with sound as such, but then again, since I really take language and discourse and networks of relationships more as my material, I always hearken back to Duchamp. I mean, Duchamp was so aware, so acutely aware of the relationship in seeing, but also in language. I mean, his language works are just magnificent, beautiful little gems. And even his his hints at sound works are really quite extraordinary. And it's Duchamp, I think, that really kind of opens up the whole, really the whole world of producing art to the act of spectatorship and the complexity of the space that is between those two acts.
And the critique of spectatorship.
And exactly. And the critique of production. The material of radio is the network, not the sound. When asked to speak about sound art, or specifically about radio art, I will often begin by arguing that radio art has nothing to do with sound. I mean, radio art happens in sound. I mean, we know that. I mean, that it is experienced as a sonic, as an acoustic phenomenon. But the material of radio for me has nothing to do with sound. It has to do with this set of relationships, the transmission, reception, and then this very complex intermediary set of relationships that has to do with sort of the station that is, you know, an organized kind of networked contusion, really, or collision of relationships. And I find that endlessly fascinating, and that kind of the space of those relationships and figuring out ways to bring that series of relationships to life and make them meaningful, make them live, give them a voice, and animate that whole kind of circularity of both past relationships that are inscribed in some of the technological tools, and then the living, vivid relationships of listeners and speakers, and then reversing those roles and figuring out ways to reverse those roles. That's really what the heart of radio is. I mean, the material of radio is the network, not the sound. If your material is the media, then you're looking for a relationship. We're talking about not impression, not projection. We're talking about really kind of seduction, invitation, a kind of here we are together in this very uncertain, you know, kind of relationship, and let's see what we can negotiate here.
Here at the Laboratory for Innovation and Acoustic Research, we're always looking for ways to integrate creative sound into the rhythms of everyday life. So, for example, this summer we have been developing a technique which permits us to freeze individual sounds, in this case, sounds from brass instruments, into ice cubes, transforming that familiar icon of the American kitchen, the ice tray, into a recording device. In theory, one could continue to add ice cubes and instruments. But in this case, we're presenting a brass choir of 6 voices to offer a few moments of gentle harmony in an increasingly cacophonous world. From the Laboratory for Innovation and Acoustic Research, until next time, this is Gregory Whitehead. Mm-hmm.
Gregory, I can't think of anyone better than you to answer this question. What does it mean to talk about radio as a disembodied voice? The concept of the disembodied voice is something of a cliche in talking about radio. What do people usually mean when they use the term disembodied voice to talk about radio? And how do you use it?
Well, I think what they mean is the kind of, you know, is a voice that's literally been severed from the body. And there's something intrinsically uncanny about that. You think of, for example, a head that's been severed from the body and held up, you know, being held by the hair, and then the head
there's the head
draping down, and you know, there's that sense there is this head being held up there, freed from any one body and just jabbering away, and there's something kind of disturbing about that. Whether that's actually the case, I think nowadays it's just so, you know, the disembodied is, I mean, it's more remarkable to be in communication with someone as we are right now, where it's kind of face to face. I mean, that's actually becomes more and more the exception. So disembodied is actually, I think, a rather pedestrian phenomenon. Much more interesting, it seems to me, is to go into some of the dynamics of things like ventriloquism, the throwing of the voice, not the severing, not the kind of uncanny, you know, head that's jabbering, but the throwing of a voice and what that means. And, you know, there is a sense in which some of my works are a kind of ventriloquism. And then ventriloquism is also raises questions of impersonation and actually taking on the voice of another. And, I mean, that's another, I think, very interesting area to explore, which I've tried to do on in a couple of pieces. Ventriloquism, impersonation, infiltration, resistance. Ventriloquism, impersonation, infiltration. Ventriloquism, resistance. Impersonation.
Ventriloquism,
infiltration.
Impersonation.
Resistance.
Infiltration.
Ventriloquism, impersonation.
Ventriloquism,
infiltration.
Impersonation.
Ventriloquism,
impersonation.
Ventriloquism, impersonation.
Ventriloquism, impersonation.
Ventriloquism,
infiltration.
Ventriloquism, impersonation.
Resistance.
Ventriloquism,
impersonation.
Ventriloquism,
infiltration.
Infiltration.
Ventriloquism, impersonation.
Ventriloquism,
infiltration.
Impersonation.
Infiltration, resistance, ventriloquism, impersonation, infiltration, resistance.
You take the ability to talk for granted, don't you? Then why shouldn't you? You talk every day of your life and you don't think much about it. But did you realize that millions of people suffer from voice problems? These millions can't take talking for granted. For them, to talk is a struggle.
Do you have a voice like...
No.
Do you have a voice like...
No.
Do you have a voice like...
Yeah.
Mine? Do you have a voice like...
No.
As in, stand.
Do you have a voice like...
Is running.
Do you have a voice like... Mine? Do you have a voice like... Do you want a voice like mine? Do you want a voice like... Mine? Do you want a voice like...
Is he...
Do you want... Do you want a voice like... With a voice like mine... What would you want a voice like? Do you want a voice... Do you want a voice like... What would you do with a voice like... What would you do? How would you survive? Would you seize? Would you hide? Would you seize power? Would you dissect it? Ingest it? Roll it around on your tongue? And then what? And then what? And then what? Would it give you pleasure? Would it get you in? Would it take you away? Gently? With a light touch? Take it out. Take it away. Take it. How can you... Take it out. Take it away. Take it... Gently? With a light... Roll it around on your pleasure. And then what? 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 And then what?
The autonomy of the voice is a misnomer, because the voice not only carries a body with it, but it also recreates a body. It recreates a body phantasmatically. And one shouldn't forget that there are also oral prostheses as there are physical prostheses. So in this new, with this new phantasmatic body, one can create sonorous monsters, sonorous hybrids. And we do that with a cutting knife, with microphones, with computers, with all of the things that you're going to do to my voice by the time people hear it on the radio.
The ostensible purpose of my lecture demonstration, Principia Schizophonica, is to explore in some detail both the expressive or artistic and the philosophical implications of the expanding cultural predominance of communications technologies and electronic media that are rooted in and engendered by the phenomenologically violent, though technically sanitized act of severing subjectively generated phonic materials from the natural warmth of the human glottis and casting them forth into the cold anti-nature of the disembodied speech apparatus. While the cognitive capacities for the genesis of an individuated language remain embodied in the human corpus, if the speech apparatus becomes material attached, distended, dislocated, and thereby becomes available for the performative degeneration of its own post-mortem scrutiny, more analysis, and subsequent retransmission. If, as it has been stated by many others, the residual corruptions of human glottis automatic casting hold into and above all beyond the wasted and the electromagnetic currencies, decapitation, all those who participate as in the entranced and even cannibalistic complex guards to his make taking the words of the then other, we are formally obliged to mouth Martin Heidegger. Might one then not ask, what is for one's role dimension? And what does of severing subjectively generated phonic materials from the natural warmth of the human glottis and casting them forth into the cold and tiny speech apparatus. While the cognitive synthesis of an individuated language can remain embodied in the human corpus, the speech apparatus becomes materially detached, distended, dislocated. It is my contention here, although this detachment is enforced through means external, it is at least as significant to the detachment of the signifier from respond for for an even more consequential lesson in the deeply embedded discourse of existential phonocentry. If, as it has been stated by many others, it results in waste and neglect and headless utterances of all those who participate in the entranced and even cannibalistic fervor with regards to more than other obliged mouth eyes of Martin Heidegger, rooted ways the like fundamental the orientation to suggest the impulse to indulge severance in nature of and consequently profoundly and inescapably auto-erotic.
You're listening to Gregory Whitehead on Radio Radio.
Are you really going
to
do this like this?
This is classic interference here.
Actually, look back.
Sure.
Back and focus. I'm not going to let you get through this.
So much of radio, I'm going to ask you about communication.
Well, it's not that I don't believe in communication. I mean, we mentioned before that it's just the simplicity of communication is a phantom. I try to simply make manifest the complexities that are truthfully present in that attempt to communicate, often within a network, or even between two individuals, that there is a kind of the presence of interference that is based in discrepant cultural histories, biographical histories, organic differences of sensation, of definition of the senses, or what have you, all the things that we would need to negotiate in order to make certain that we were indeed communicating. I mean, the word communication, this act in which you are creating a kind of communion, I mean, that it's, it inspires reverence. The very word inspires a kind of reverent attitude. And I think the desire to communicate is very, very strong, certainly in me. Otherwise, how could I possibly have churned out all these hours of radio broadcast, and yet always conscious of how difficult that is, and how much interference, disruption, countercurrent, the countervailing ideas, insights, sensations that are present in every reverent moment. So, for example, in Shake, Rattle, and Roll, that communication is community bit, where you know, I literally become a kind of, you know, this take on the voice of the priest of the of transmission, and it's, you know, communication is community, and then the audience repeats communication is community, you know, and that and so forth. And you might want to use that.
Communication is community.
Communication is community.
The technology of transmission.
The technology of transmission.
Is the promise of one world.
The promise of one world.
Made whole.
Made whole.
Brought together.
Brought together.
All languages.
All languages.
All races.
All races.
All cultures.
All cultures.
I dream of a time.
I dream of a time.
When everybody on the planet lives.
When everybody on the planet lives.
Breathe
and touch each other on air.
A glorious communion.
A glorious communion.
A celebration to end all celebration.
A celebration to end all celebration.
In a language to end all languages.
In a language to end all languages.
Communication is community.
Communication is community.
The technology of transmission.
The technology of transmission.
Is the promise of one world made whole.
Is the promise of one world made whole.
Brought together.
Brought together.
All languages, all races, all cultures.
All languages, all races, all cultures.
I dream of a time.
I dream of a time.
When everybody on the planet lives, breathes, and touches each other on air.
When everybody on the planet lives, breathes, and touches on air.
A glorious communion.
A glorious communion.
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 A celebration to end all celebration.
A celebration to end all celebration.
In a language to end all language.
In a language to end all language.
Finnegan's Wake.
Finnegan's Wake.
Here comes everybody.
Here comes everybody.
Finnegan's Wake.
Finnegan's Wake.
Here comes everybody.
Here comes everybody.
He had been invited to Sydney to produce a radio
and
piece.
He appeared there on the radio as Gregory Whitehead, the Screamscape specialist, who came to do a study of the Screamscape of Sydney.
And it's a wonderful piece on several levels. It's obviously a phenomenological archiving of screams.
It's also a spoof in part on Artaud, one hears.
But even more so,
it's
a study of radiophony itself, of the limits and the circuits of the radiophonic apparatus. What he did was get on the
and
radio, ask people to call in their screams. So the circuit he created was radio, telephone, answering machine, which is a primitive recorder. He archived the screams, it went into the mix, and was rebroadcast on the radio.
Gregory, I've been told that you were, at least at one time, the world's foremost authority on the Screamscape. What is the Screamscape?
Pressures of the Unspeakable, a project where I announced this kind of this whole area of philosophical investigation called Screamscape Studies, which in a way was a gentle fun at Soundscape. Studies and soundscape ideas, and as a kind of antithesis to soundscape, which is often about silence and the loss of silence and some elegant natural sound in the presence of silence, I would explore the screamscape, which was this kind of cacophony, this kind of collision of largely human raw physical energy, colliding with limited technological means. So it was the real heart of the project is not the scream, but the part of the project was me entering into the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, presenting myself as Dr. Gregory Whitehead, the director of the Institute for Screamscape Studies, announcing this project, generating publicity, inviting listeners to contribute their screams, and then composing a kind of report at the end of a four-week period. That would be the result of my research. And you know, it was incredible how, for me, that was it was proof that all you need these days is a business card, and you know, you're an immediate talk show. You know, you're on the circuit went extremely well. You know, we had hundreds of respondents, some of whom I think were aware that it was a game. Others thought it was a research. And of course, it doesn't really matter, because the whole point was to enter into the network, trigger a kind of flow, and see what happens. I mean, it was really kind of an experiment in which I didn't have much control. I mean, I was one individual in the network, and perhaps I was, of course, I was privileged in the network, and I could make certain things happen and stop other things from happening. But there were a lot of other players in the network, and the result was really a kind of play, much of which was well outside of my control, and I think that's why the piece is successful.
Just bear with me while I phone a new extension line here in the ABC, a new service that's provided at the moment. 1312, 1312, that's the extension. Going through. You know what they're like, these ABC phones. They're absolutely appalling. I'm getting the control room through here on the intercom. Dave, could you turn the intercom off? That's it. Just bear with us. Okay, well, we won't have the phone going into the screen room just yet. But anyway, I can tell you it is a new service here at the ABC. Your 8 cents a day gives you a chance of not only screaming down the telephone, and people are actually doing it, as you can hear.
Hello. My name is Keelan O'Connor. I live in Goulburn. Here is my special End of a Hard Day in Year 6 scream.
At all. Okay, but they're very varied, infinitely varied screams, aren't they?
Absolutely.
And they seem to take on a life of their own. You start off screaming at one point and you'll end up at another.
Yeah, and at the Institute we're fond of saying that that everyone screams, but everyone screams alone.
Oh, yes, I wish I'd had that in my introduction. That's a wonderful line. Sounds a bit like an S&M bondage.
Well, I know, and screams happen at this borderline of pleasure and pain, and and we do encourage people to invite their friends or into the scream room or set up whatever situation they want, which will help them to access their innermost scream.
Are these screams confidential? We're not going to...
Absolutely. Well, there's no way, since it's strictly a radio project, there's no way to match screams with bodies. Once we have the screams, only the screams remain.
Yeah, and what are you going to do with them? It's wonderful for you. Should do this each day after the program. Just, I'm all puffed out now. I'll let you go.
You've been listening to Gregory Whitehead on Radio Radio. Our music was composed and performed by George Bruner, and we had technical help from Franz Moore. Radio Radio is made possible by grants from the PSC CUNY Research Fund of the City University of New York, and with the support of the Department of Television and Radio and the Music Department at Brooklyn College. I'm the producer of Radio Radio, Martin Spinelli.